Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Lowry. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. I am excited about this guest because it's my big brother. My big brother, Davis Lowry, talks hunting and fishing with me. We have been doing this since we were born. My brother is much more the outdoorsman than me, and I am quite the outdoorsman. If it comes to saltwater angling, freshwater angling, but hunting, walking, tracking, you name it, my big brother can do it. If it has to do with Mother Nature and something, I'm telling you, there's a lot of guys out there, a lot of women out there that can, you know, hold their own in nature, but I would put my big brother up against anybody and put him with anybody if you wanted to stay safe, eat, and live in case this world ever goes to shit. But I was really excited to have him on, as you'll be able to tell. You'll see our big brother, little brother banter back and forth. But I love chatting with him. We covered a few fishing stories and a few hunting stories. So if that kind of stuff bothers you listening to that, then don't listen any further. But I would advise you that uncomfortable is where the change is. And sometimes just because you may be against something wholeheartedly or something, you may still want to experience it and get the information. Because if you can't argue both sides of a story, well, then I'm going to say you're naive if you can't defend both sides. So it's always good to get competence on both sides. And so if you're not a hunter, if you're not a angler, or you don't believe in any of that, I would still advise you to listen, because we don't just trade some "it's this big, it was that big" hunting and fishing stories. We talk about conservation and what that means. And, you know, I see hunting, fishing, growing organic, etc., living off nature, returning to Mother Nature, this healthy lifestyle becoming popular. I see it spreading all over the world, all over the United States, and you see this upsurge happening of people hunting their own food, growing their own food, etc. And, you know, I hope it's not a fad. I hope it's just not passing. You're seeing a upswell in people learning archery, etc., and hunting across the United States and the world. And with that has come the other side, the emergence of those anti-hunting, anti-eating meat, you know, that think it's cruelty, etc. And you hear both sides of that argument emerging in today. So I wanted to have my brother on, one, because not too many people can talk the outdoors and have the stories like he has. My God. But we both see nature from almost a spiritual perspective. It's not about just taking what we want it and when we need it. We don't treat Mother Nature that way. Everything is respectful in what we do. And we're trying to talk a little bit about that side of hunting and fishing and what that means, and even talk about what it can mean to your kids and showing them how to hunt and eat for themselves. It's life-changing. But, you know, all around this country are hunters and anglers. I mean, it's a massive market. It's in the culture still in a lot of places. And as it hits mass media now, I just kind of want to remind everybody that there's some folks out there that have been doing this a long, long time, that have been catching, shooting, hunting, trapping, and growing their own food for a long, long time. It's been a way of life for grandfathers passed down to grandfathers, and dads passing down to daughters, and daughters passing down. It's just growing. And so the more I see it, I want to be happy that it's becoming more aware, but you never know where it could go, you know? But us Florida boys, some of you Midwestern boys, girls, some of you Florida girls, all over the place, even up to Vermont and all over, there's a culture out there that exists with nature, that uses nature to better our own lives as we respect nature in the same sense. And I think if you can take away anything from this podcast, it's to take away that both sides kind of have a point and both sides are respectful in their own manner. But I think we have to listen and we got to be open. But, you know, if you haven't hunted, if you're anti-hunting, You know, I don't want to sway you or try to change your mind. That's not my point. I don't condemn and I don't convert, you know, to quote Ziggy Marley. But, you know, you got to experience things, I think, at least once in your life to be able to fully grasp and understand what people are talking about and what it means, you know. And my brother tells a couple stories. And if you listen carefully and you can be there when he's telling a couple of them, you can maybe see what we mean about how it's more of a spiritual thing and why men and women do this and why I think it's beginning to spread across the globe and especially the United States. But, you know, us Lowry boys have been doing this a long, long time. We've been hunting and fishing and catching our own stuff for a long time. And it was really fun. It was heartfelt for me to be able to share this with my brother and you all out there, just some of our fishing stories and some of his fishing and hunting stories too. And we barely covered enough of them. So we're going to be talking about this a lot, but for all of our friends and followers that posted and joined us live last night, thank you for joining us live and hanging out. And a lot of hunters and anglers posted exactly what we asked for on our post. We asked people to post their best hunting and fishing pictures that they had on Facebook and Twitter on our post, and boy, did they go to town. So if that kind of stuff is for the faint of heart for you, if that bothers you, I urge you, don't look at our Facebook comment post, okay? There's some things there that may slap you and may make you want to send me death threats like the six I got last night. But, you know, it's a way of life for many of us out there. So I wanted to give a shout out to those that posted and participated. Brent Shiver was first. He's a friend of mine. We grew up together. He was a street behind me. Love you, Brent. I love it. Your dad, Mickey Shriver there, man. It's good to see him. Haven't seen that face in a long time. And heck of a deer you got there, man. A lot of white tail. You know, Brent posted a few. See, Heath Broadway, we actually talk about you on the podcast, Big Brother. Many times growing up, Heath was mistaken for my big brother. He is a, I love the dude, man. We spent a lot of time in my life together, you know, fishing on his mom's lake back behind his house and doing some things. And he posted a picture with his son, Hunter, who we talk about Hunter, actually, on the podcast a lot. So shout out to Heath Broadway and Hunter Broadway. Love you guys. Davey talks a lot about you on the podcast. Thanks for posting your picture there. You were actually fishing the day we posted this. So that was cool, man. Dr. Parker Mott, who you guys, all the fans, listeners, you ladies and guys know, is our backcountry psychologist who joins the podcast often. And if you heard his podcast, he was a professional bass fisherman, sponsored and the whole thing at like 16, man. He was like a freshwater fishing rock star. Perhaps explains the Hunter S. Thompson infatuation. But he posted a lot of his largemouth bass that he's posted up. Look at that, man. Got some nice fish he's posted. Looks good. Even a little bluegill there from Brent's son. He's got it posted up there. Look at that, man. Oh, that's where we all started, I think, in Florida, right? Isn't that where we started? I think all of us maybe came up one time or another in our lives balling up little dough balls on a hook and one after another just catching the heck out of bluegill, man. I know I did that coming up with a cane pole, actually, in Pine Hills and Memaw Davis, my grandmother's backyard, in a canoe sometimes. And a few of my friends out there joined me in that yellow Mohawk canoe as we swung little cane pole sticks and caught bluegill after bluegill. So shout out to all my childhood friends that came up doing that with me. Dar, I know you're out there, my cousin. We did that most of our lives, man. And I know you came up fishing with us too. And hell, your dad, my Uncle Daryl, was a professional bass fisherman himself. It's just kind of in the family. There's Brent again. Brent, man, you're all over the place, brother, with your alligators and your kid, man. I love it, dude. And, you know, we talk about that on the podcast. We talk about how this is about experiencing nature with your family. And sometimes we get lost in the idea of wanting to just get meat or trophies, etc. And, you know, we don't really hunt for trophies. That's not what us Lowrys do. But even if it's a meat trophy, you know, something we're proud of to feed our family. But it's really about the experiences. You know, the ones you share with your kids and your dads and your grandfathers and your mothers and your daughters and your cousins. It's about those experiences, and I think that's what we try to talk about on this part of the podcast, not just the hunt or feeding your family or even feeding poor villages like my brother did with a wildebeest in Botswana. But, you know, definitely check out our Facebook post. Brent's all over it. My buddy Chris Beckemeyer, who you've heard on the podcast before as well, one of our tribe members and leaders. He's a soldier out there living his cognitive rampage. I definitely suggest you listen to his podcast. Nice big redfish he's posted. You know, I know Chris uses the water and fishing as one of his primal activities to keep his spirit and soul in line. So thanks for posting, Chris. Heath again. Oh, my God, man. All right, dude. Woo. All right, man. That's a heck of a picture up in your Bama deer plant. All right. Woo. That's the three of the six death threats I got last night were directly from that picture. So thank you, Heath Broadway, for those wonderful death threats from those vegans. I think it's funny that I get death threats from vegans that don't want harm to animals, but they're quick to want to kill me. Well, I mean, no offense, vegans. Seriously. I mean, more power to you that you can eat like that, man. I ain't hating on you. I tried it for a little bit, and I can't front. When I was eating like that for a little bit, I will not front. My body, you know, it vacuum sealed. You know, I looked much better. I didn't feel very healthy though. But that was just my personal experience. I was probably doing some shit wrong, I'm sure. But you know, it really showed, you know, so I'm not hating on vegans at all, man. I mean, you know, more power to you. Do what you do. As long as you don't hate on me, I'm not hating on you. Ben Meeks. Wow. Look at you, buddy. It's been a while since I've seen you, Ben. Holy shit, my friend. We went to school together, him and his brothers. Look at those points, man. Got some nice whitetails up there. Got a whole crew with you there with the bow hunt. Ben, thanks for participating so heavily, man, and post. Oh, man. Okay. Now, there's a little baby deer that Ben is just hanging out with, just laying up. That's too cute, man. I mean, not you, dude. All right? But the deer's cute. But thanks for participating, Ben. I love that, man. Those are some, wow, what a hunt. Johnny Hurst, I knew that was coming, buddy. That's why I tagged you on this. I knew you were going to have some serious picks coming out of there. But look at that, Johnny. Thanks for, heck, good cobia catch. Nice. I love that cobia meat, man. Oh, another picture from Ben Meeks. I like that long walk in the black and white. Cool picture. Johnny Hurst, heck of a hunting day there, man. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 deer on that day. I'd like to know how long that hunt was, man. You know, let's see. Johnny Hex got some nice tails. For those of you, we do talk lobstering on this podcast and what that's about. We get pretty direct and offensive towards some people in lobstering. So I'm sorry, but we said the truth of what we felt and what we've seen. And I've been lobstering since I was 6 years old. In Marathon and all the way up. So we definitely get into that. So, Johnny, thanks for posting the lobster catch there. And then my brother went to town at the end of the podcast and started posting up some of his stuff. So just some of his recent stuff, too. The deer that is in the river under the log, I'll let him tell that story. Massive bull dolphin there with Gary Gallantine, who's a friend of the family. Love you. Shout out to Gary Gallantine. And then... Well, see, he's going to have to come back on. We agree on the podcast. My brother's going to come back on once a month or so, and we're going to talk primal hunting and stuff because, you know, that's what he's doing. And he's got some stories, too, and there's some pictures here that go with it. And then Brian Shiver joins the posting as well. Shout out to you, Brian Shiver. I hope you're doing good, buddy. That is Brent's older brother who went to school with my brother. And we're all kind of linked, huh? Wow, heck of a fishing trip to the Tortugas. Brian, look at that, man. Dolphin galore, fish all over the boat. That's how you do it, man. Well done, sir. Well done, sir. And that's feeding your family. And what I hope you all remember when you're looking at these pictures is this isn't about murder or killing or what you think of. Because every one of these animals that you're seeing here, every one of these fish, every one of these deer, every one of these animals, lobsters, etc., fed their family. Took it home and fed their cousin's family, their brother's family. This feeds families. These aren't people just taking things to take them. So those pictures, if you're looking at fish being held up, etc., I want you to picture little babies, little daughters and sons that get fed the most natural, clean, and organic meat that you can possibly find. I mean, that's what these pictures really represent. It's not about murder or taking these animals. This is about you versus nature, you with nature, you immersed in nature, trading each other. You get experience and life and feeling, and nature gives you food and gives you life to take home to your family. And, you know, that's what these pictures really represent. You know, then my brother posts up his buddy and friend Coach McGuire out in Kodiak, Alaska with 60-pound king salmons here. These are amazing fish. Thanks. I know, Coach, you're going to be with my brother doing a lot of things here. Yeah, so I appreciate you, you know, being with my brother hanging out there, man. I'll be up there soon to do it with you. Like I said, my brother went to town posting after that. You know, his wife, Noelle. Love you, Noelle. Love you, Seneca. See you in these pictures. Nice dolphin. Nice, good, big cow. That huge cobia my brother caught in November 2013. You got to see the picture on the Facebook. The cobia is damn near as long as him, and the head is as wide as his fucking head. It's amazing the size of that cobia. Another couple, that's that same picture, the same cobia with my little niece. Love you. Beautiful pictures he's posted of Alaska. We talk about a lot of places in Alaska on the podcast, and that's why he posted those pictures. Huge day with his buddy Eric out of Marco. Then their local bear, if you want to see the Kodiak bear that shows up to my brother's bedroom window randomly. He's got that picture posted. That ATV, we talk about a trip he takes. That's a reference picture. And holy shit, Brian Shriver. Mini season 2009, you were holding two bugs up. My God. You want to see a lobster tail, people, and the size of an actual Florida lobster coming out of the Atlantic. Heck of a catch, Brian. Unless you got that in the Gulf, dude. But wow. Those are some beasts there from mini season, Brian. Nice bugs, man. Nice bugs. Ben, you're all over the place again, man, posting it up. Thank you, everybody. Ben Meeks, Brian Shriver, Brent Shriver, Chris Beckemeyer. I'm scanning them all. Davis Lowry, Johnny Hurst. Let's see. All you anglers and fishers out there, man, feeding your family. Parker Mott, Heath Broadway, of course. All of you. You know, that are taking care of your family, that are passing this down to your sons and your daughters. Thank you. Keep passing that respect down. Keep passing down the knowledge and the reasons why. Because we got to pay that respect forward to our little ones. And we got to share that experience with nature and with the ones we love. But look, I don't want to talk anymore. It's been a really long intro. Sorry for the long one. Let's just get to the podcast. Thanks for doing this, big brother. I love you, man. Can't wait to see you soon. This is my big brother, Davis Big Bear Lowry.
Hey, honored to be a part. There's a bit of a delay on the thing, so I'm going by the audio. That's correct?
Yeah, slight delay, but I guess that's what comes when you're... I'm down here in the armpit of the United States here of Florida, and you're up there on the peaks.
Well, we had sun today, so we just got back. We went out way out to Antarnalarsen Bay, took the family and my backpack and a baby in a backpack, and just got outside. It's we've had a lot of rain, so today the sun was out, and so we thought we'd hike, just get outdoors, carry a gun and put a gun and a fishing pole in the truck and start driving.
That's how I was glad to see you, man, because you had texted me. We always talk at the strangest times, man, because you're over there living in that world on that time, and I'll get a text sometimes from you like 4 a.m., and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to wake up at 7 and text this dude back, dude. And but, yeah, you told me today, man. You said just grab some fishing rods, grab the gun, went out in the sun, and just was going to see what happens.
We did. We've had probably 3 or 4 days of sun in the last 6 or 7 weeks. It's just been rain every day. Although it's nice, it's why I'm in this sort of scene B here. If I walk about 20 steps, there's a 90-foot cliff in the ocean with waves beating on the ocean right out there. So we scrambled today and grabbed the kids and the guns and the fishing gear and took off and just wanted to go somewhere we hadn't been yet. And we found some we hiked about a mile in, found some bear signs and some carcasses and things like that. So,
yeah, America, don't be alarmed when you hear the man say, we grabbed the kids and guns and went for a walk. I can see some people going like, seriously? He grabbed his kids and his guns and went for a walk.
Well, I should qualify that, yeah.
But in Kodiak, you do got to be careful when you're going to take a stroll into the woods.
Right.
Right?
Right. We can go out the backyard and trails up into the kind of an arboreal forest area, or we can drive out where we did today. And if there's game and there's fish, then there are things that eat them. So given that the largest brown bears on earth live here, chance favors
Yeah, right. I'm sorry, but I'm not going hiking out there with the largest brown bears on earth, Kodiak bears. I'm going to be like, no, we'll be fine.
I think this time we're still as safe as you're going to get. It's still fairly cold, but not too bad. Today was sunny and 40 degrees, and that felt like $1 million.
Yeah, 40 degrees for you is like constant air condition.
Yeah, don't mind at all. Don't mind at all.
So, man, you know, there's some people watching and listening that you know from Heath Broadway to Yeah, you know, a lot of people know that you were down in Marco Island and you decided to move there from Chicago. That's what took my family down there. I want to be close to you. So we went down there. We lived there for a while. And then you go, Adam, I'm going to fucking Kodiak, Alaska from Marco Island, man, from one corner to the other. So for all the friends watching that haven't talked to you or seen you, man, I think you got some splaining to do.
It's not just hunting and fishing then.
No, because we're gonna get there, because I know we can't talk about Marco Island and moving to Alaska and not talk about the reasons you moved there.
Well, for us, simply sold shares out of a business, we were in a matter of fact went to Key West, made the decision while we were near Key West.
That's right.
Dad's place down there. And
well, when we do the virtual thing, it'll suck because one of us will try to talk and we'll interrupt each other. When you ain't got to go all that far, man. I was alluding to, you know, we talked about how nature was calling you, man. You know, when you sat on the porch when you first came over and you were like, Alaska was just calling you to away, you know, that's really what I meant. Not all that other shit, man. That shit's all gone, bro. You know, it's like, I want to talk about that, how it just pulled you there. It called you. You know what I mean?
You're right. The stars sort of aligned with an opportunity here. Plus, there's about 5 bucket list things that Alaska and relatively only Alaska holds in a selfish way. But we were in a mode of getting back to the family, you know, from, you know, as you know, a couple of years ago, doing 100 to 120 flights a year, to now having the opportunity to come home and then be home, and then on the weekends and sometimes even during the week, live in a place where you can hunt and fish out of your backyard. You know, when Scarlett was born, she just turned a year old, and as you know, and that was really what it was about for us. It was a quality of life decision, and sea of life decision that needed to be made, as effective and as sharp as any other kind of life decision or even business decision that I've been making for the last few years.
Man, dude, thanks for sharing the whole soul there, man. But it's true, man. Since you're already on it, man, you know, you were a businessman, dude. Those flights, those 150s, living on those fucking tight jets and shit, man. You know, what's the correlation been for you, like you said, returning back to the family like this? What's it been like for you for real, man?
From a daily perspective, relating to the profession, I'd say it's like getting shoved off a train. And when you hit the ground, you tumble a few times, And that moment, which you're dizzy and trying to find your place, that's where it is. And you go, wow, I didn't realize life was going by that fast. You think you know, but you don't until you actually do that. Does that answer your question?
Sorry, dude. I was all like, I'm lost in you, dude. You had me, man. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm there. Yeah, man. I mean, but that's kind of like what you did, man. I mean, us Lowrys are kind of known to just say fuck and jump off a train one day, man. And you did that, bro. That's a badass metaphor, dude. I've never heard that, man. That was good.
It's, you know, I'm going to, and I've been blessed to be able to enjoy, like you said, Marco Island and the scenery there and the Keys. And then you come here and, you know, I'm fortunate to see otters and puffins and, you know, in about 4 weeks, there's about 300 whales going to show up in the bay down the road. The gray whale migration comes in and they all come in Yugak Bay. And, so there's just so much, you know, I didn't realize how vast Kodiak was. I just knew it held a whole lot of secrets and some check marks, you know, staying on your topic.
Where was the place you wanted to go most, man? Where was the bucket list starting, man?
Well, certainly Alaska, New Zealand, and I think New Zealand maybe closer to retirement, you know, but definitely Alaska. And, you know, that, like I said, it's sort of the opportunity arose here to do a few things for our family as a whole, my wife and her craft and being able to write and do some things. And I'm telling you, if you're an author out there and you want to get in your own world, this is the place to do it.
I bet, man. I'm telling you, I'm almost picking up the words on the second book I'm writing, man. And I don't know, dude, I may have to come Stephen King it, dude, and just like camp out in the creepy place out in your backyard or something.
No, it's great. Just plenty of room. You'll see plenty. My family, when they were, I was here well before them. And then when they got here, they woke up the next morning and we've got about an acre and a half's worth of salmonberry bushes in the yard. And, so we went out to just literally woke up, rubbed our eyes, got coffee, walked outside. The first few handfuls, you know, we look up and there's a brown bear 50 yards from us. We're not the only ones that like berries, by the way. So, yeah. So that was a, hey, welcome to Kodiak.
Well, yeah, man. And you got to think about it. Like, right. Imagine you're leaving the Marco Island suburb type thing, right? Where you could just, you know, go hang out. But you got to, I mean, now with little Scarlet around and Seneca's only, what, 10? Anyway, you can't just like run out front.
You can play. Yeah, you're right. You have to be aware of your surroundings. You're not, the local playground is your backyard, but everything in nature uses it. So right before you called, there were two bald eagles sitting on the porch yelling at each other with the wind blowing in. The open ocean is right here, literally right here.
How politically literal is that shit? Two bald eagles at the time yelling at each other. That was a bad attempt at a joke, I think. Like the two parties yelling at each other.
I gotcha.
Damn, it was that bad. That's fucked up.
No, it was all right. I got it. It was delayed over here.
Oh, man. Yeah, no jokes on a delayed podcast. That just kills it. Where was the spot? When you first got there and you were setting up shop, it wasn't long, dude, before you were sending me pictures in some Humvee on some rock desert, and then you were with your buddy Coach McGuire there, and you're out in sea, and you're, I mean, dude, you got there and hit the ground running, doing shit every minute you could, man. What was the first thing you did when you touched down outdoors?
I drove out the north side of the road. There's only 40 miles of road here, and you're talking about the second largest island in the Pacific. There's only 40 miles of road, so yeah. So I drove out the road and a place called Menashka Bay, if you're on Google Earth, and the road ends up there. and walked out, and the creek mouth there was it's where that Menashka Creek dumps into the ocean, and there was hundreds of pink salmon getting up the river. So I had some fun doing that, catching a few other things. And matter of fact, that only I'd gone to a couple of practices of football, and the only people I saw were two ball players that came out to do the same thing. But one of them, you know, Jake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So your first meeting with Jake there was out there fishing too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd seen him on the field one time, and had been here trying to get things in order, and couldn't wait to, matter of fact, had mailed in advance a couple of rods and reels to myself, not knowing where they would end up. So I sent them to the school, and because I didn't know where I was going to live. And
he just took, imagine that.
Went to the school. Yeah. Grabbed my stuff at the school and took off.
Let me mail my shit ahead of time. I don't know where I'm staying. I'm flying to fucking Kodiak. When I get there, I'll get my rods and reels. At least I know I can fucking eat. And then I'll figure something out.
That's right.
That shit runs in the fucking
lot. The only drawback was I wasn't armed, you know, and I, you know, you get so enthralled. If you go out to places like Coach McGuire took me out to Saltry and Uyak Bay, that really look like something out of Lord of the Rings. There are so many different climates. You can climb in elevation and get to the snow tops. You can, you know, I've got 100-foot trees in my yard. But you can spend all day, especially if you're from Florida, looking at the scenery. And then I'm out there at Menashka Bay, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, you start to think, you think ahead of time, but you forget when you get there, and you say, well, I'm not the only thing that's after the salmon. And you tend to turn around and look every now and then a little more than you normally do.
And now that comes a lot from you, dude, because if you're telling me, now look, a lot of people that don't hunt or don't fish may hear that and, you know, and be scared about what you're saying. And a lot of people that do hunt and fish, you know, they put themselves in those situations a lot, you know, and, you know, so they get that. But for me, because I know all of your hunting stories and I know all of your crazy Captain Ahab fishing attempts and trips across Gulf of Mexico's and shit, because I have the diary of what, you know, you have done, for you to say something like that, to look around behind you, all I can think about, I'm sorry, dude, is what the fuck did you camp out overnight in Africa with a bow for?
Oh, you went right to Africa from here.
Well, because I'm listening to you talk about...
Yeah, that's sort of a famous campfire story.
Well, I listened to you nervously talk about fishing for salmon in Kodiak, but then I can't help but go, wait. But overnight, on the ground, no weapon, with a bow, you sat in what, Zimbabwe?
I was right on the border of Botswana and South Africa.
Oh, Botswana, that's right. That's right, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they built a road a long time ago out there in Lefalale province that has an end to it. It's literally a road to nowhere. And so this particular stretch of road, I hunted past this, you know, I was glad to see we drove some ways past this road, but... You know, even it's been there long enough where the lions have learned to run the giraffes onto the road because the giraffes will slip and fall. But yeah, this one area, I wanted to hunt off the concession. And I was, of course, delayed, as you well know, in Dakar.
Now, when you skip over and say hunt off concession, for those non-hunters, what he really said is he wants to make it fair.
Yeah, well, and even on the concession, you're talking about concession landowners that have these land tracts that are, you know, 10, 20,000 hectares, you know, 2.2 acres per hectare. So you can do the math, but these are vast areas. And in this particular place, it was hunting plains game, and something that we arranged that I got to, thanks to our friends at RHR, got to arranged with a guy I'd read articles about as a kid, and he's the one driving me out, which was really cool.
What's his name?
And Angus Brown. And So we drove out, and he reminded me on the way there that this was what I had asked for. I had to sign a waiver, and there are no guns in that province, so I assume that's where he wanted me to go with this story. But yeah, I can. It's one of those trips where you can still smell what you smelled, see what you see, hear what you heard years later, you know, in your own mind. But so, yeah, we set up a blind and a little bit of a small boma behind the blind. And these, you're talking about bushes with thorns that are 3 inches long. And you think that nothing on earth is coming through there. So we kind of set it up behind the blind so that my focus was like a double bull blind right here, right in front and to both sides, where if I had to, I could get the bow out. And again, you were right. I heard you on another podcast say there are no guns allowed except for the landowner. And since I was hunting off anybody's land, so to speak, you know, he dropped me off and he said, no one can help you. I'll be back at dark. So, and he said, whatever you do, don't run. Whatever it is, he said, whatever happens, don't run. So, and we found leopard tracks around this little watering hole we were sitting in. And so it made it real interesting. It was everything I did ask for. And I remember saying that to myself after listening to the truck drive away. Okay, you asked for this.
Dude,
so I've got a
Jesus.
Knife on my belt and a bow.
Jesus, yeah. Man. So. Come on, dude. A guy you read about your whole life in hunting and fishing drives you to a place and says, remember, you asked for this and don't run.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, dude. All right, this all keep going, dude. I'm not even talking anymore.
Oh, you want the story?
I love it, bro. Every time. I fucking love it. Keep going. Dude, I'm in.
Well, I'll skip over getting boarded in the car with machine guns, people with, you know,
oh, no. We're going to go back to how you got there. Oh, we're going back to the whole boarded machine guns. You're on CNN type shit. We're going to go back to the whole trip. Yeah. But I'm here though, man. I'm sitting in 3-inch brum bushes with you and shit, bro.
All right. We'll go back there later then. That is absolutely true. It was on CNN. So I'm sitting there, and because of the delays in Dakar and my detour that ended up taking us 30 hours to get there after the 19 and a half hour crossing. But sitting in there, and unfortunately, part of the excitement for me was the 5 hours in the truck driving to, you know, what would be base camp, where his camp up there, his land up there. Northwestern South Africa. And, you know, I wanted to see the country. You know, you go up in elevation, Highveld, Bushveld, and that was part of it. Well, I had to drive through the night because of all the delays, and it literally drove me out. So I really had not seen Africa yet until the sun came up that morning in that blind. And it was magnificent, by the way. It's everything you think it is. If you're really out there and you're, I mean, really out there, and, you know, got the boma around me, at least from behind me, maybe a 15 yards thick, maybe 20. It's a real thick boma. And, I keep using the word boma, but really it wasn't completely surrounding me or anything. But, you know, we had packed this up so that I shouldn't have to be worried anything behind me. And I was careful that morning. I went, even though I got teased a little bit, I went with the scent lock stuff and, you know, and, you know, Angus mentioned over a very late night glass of wine and a fire that I needed to be concerned in Africa with my scent going both ways for two reasons, for game and for predator. And I thought that was an interesting thing to say. I'm not sure if that was said for effect, but it made sense to me.
For the person not listening that doesn't really understand the hunting part, what he's saying is generally if you're hunting for deer, for the most part, you really only got to lock your scent in from getting to the animal you're after. And now in Africa, what the guide was remembering him and reminding him of is, remember, your scent is also game.
Yeah, it was an interesting thought as the truck drove away. But
jeez, man. And see, that's why I bring this up, because, you know, we'll get to the controversy stuff later. But I mean, that's what I meant by it was fair. You're sitting with no weapon, no gun, on no one's land in the middle of real Africa, brother. And the first time you get to see her is sitting in this place when the sun hits it.
That's correct. Yeah. It was pretty awesome. Sorry to share the personal, but I wrote my first letter to my daughter that morning.
Yeah, it was a letter to Seneca.
Yeah, it was like that. It was that moment for people who hunt for more than obviously the killing, and I think most hunters do. You understand that. You understand the thought when the world stops, when there's no phones, when there's no, and it really is just you and what's nature out there, and there's no link. I wanted to sever any possible link at all to civilization, so to speak. At least in my own mind. And of course, there was no radio range. There was nothing there. So it was 60 miles out. So, it was an interesting way. You get greeted by the wildlife there and the clouds of 1,000 finches at once coming down to, just swirling down to the water. It was a little bit of water in front of me. Seeing the game that came there and seeing the banded mongoose, that everybody reads about as a kid. Those kind of things happening in the early morning, and then of course the game later on.
Yeah, dude, I'm sorry, but yeah.
If you want, I'll
proceed, sir. That's what I'm saying, brother. Please, man. I feel like I'm at a campfire. I gotta turn the fucking lights off. The sage is burning at least, so.
Yeah. I should probably change from coffee to my favorite scotch for the rest of the story. But, yeah. So I'm sitting there and I'm seeing this wildlife. I'm really zoned in, and hunters know whether you hunt a tree stand or you hunt the ground or you're hunting in a blind, you can kind of zone in. You can hear everything for a while. All your senses begin to come alive. And then there's that little bit of a fall off where you're really hunting, you're really listening at everything, especially in a new place. Your any change of sound, a breath, anything like that that you're looking for. And, there's probably plenty listening, that have been in Africa. But, when everything is new, if you're hunting whitetail and you've been hunting whitetail your whole life, you can immediately recognize a squirrel bark or something like that. But when you're in Africa, you don't have that glossary of sounds or dictionary of sound to refer back to. You don't have that. So everything you hear and see is brand new, for the first time. So that's the cool part of it, right? You're taking it all in. Well, that kind of zones you down a little bit from being focused sometimes, at least 100%. You can't sit. I was in that blind for 11 hours and you have those periods of where your mind goes and you're not 100% focused. Well, I was in one of those places, and anybody that tells you they're 100% focused all the time in a blind for 11 hours, they're lying to you. I was in that, and then all of a sudden I hear this giant crunch behind me. It sounded like somebody stepped on 100 pounds of cereal. Bullshit. And it was very strange, again, foreign, And then it was over and over and over again. And it sounded way behind me. And then it was closer and closer and closer and closer. And I thought, surely whatever that is, then the rustling started. And I see some sort of what looks like a tumbleweed kind of fly by the blind. Just this shadow went whoom. And everything went quiet. Just absolutely perfectly. No birds, nothing, not a noise. And hunters know, depending on what you hunt, whether it's Florida or there, you understand that perfect silence sometimes it happens. And that's what happened. Then the loudest, then it was like somebody hit an amplifier. And I could hear the bushes behind me with absolutely no regard for those thorns come busting through.
What the fuck?
And I saw several.
3-inch
Franklin.
Fucking 3-inch horns.
Yeah, several Frank.
Fuck. 3-inch. No, dog, and it's like, get out of the way.
Yeah, and I saw some Franklins run by, which are like an African partridge or a game bird, you know, that are brush birds running by the blind, and I thought, good God, you know, what in the hell's behind me? It's been an interesting 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And then there was that silence again, and all of a sudden the entire blind around me flew up in the air, literally just... And I'm sitting there in my chair holding my bow.
Like the fucking right? Jurassic just... Park dude on the toilet.
Yeah, it's something like that, I guess. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. And you feel that air come up your back. And thankfully, the blind just kind of fell back down. And it was a little tilted forward. And I could see out the... you know, both double bulls, and this was kind of angled downward, the front a little bit, and it kind of fell, and it got shook again. It got almost like something was coming, and I'll tell you, my heart rate was elevated. But so it, again, I at one point part of the blind base or cage hit me in the back of the head, so I kind of went to one knee with the bow ready, so I kind of moved forward. And right near the front window. And in a double bull, you'll have those both sides. So I thought, well, I'll sit in the center right here and I'll be able to see. And I could see a shadow kind of move past the blind on my left side. And then another one passed me on the right. Oh, and I thought, oh, okay. Because right now I have no indication. There's no...
You're being hunted, bro.
No indication. Well, yeah. You, in your mind, you don't know. And, oh gosh, it seemed like, a long time, but it really wasn't. The next thing I know, I scoot up cause I hear the brush move. So I kind of scoot up thinking, anticipating something to move this way. And well, the next thing I know, this huge bull giraffe head is no more than 2 feet from my face. And now the blind, and he kicked it, like I said, again, but he was kicking the blind. That's what happened. And so when I scooted forward, that blind kind of rested forward on the brush like this. So I'm here now, and that thing's face. And this is the funny part, just like a you know, multiply a white tail times 100, but he blew just and stuff. So close enough where stuff hit me in the face.
Oh, fuck.
And drew in a big scent. He was trying to get scent. Any hunter will laugh right now knowing that that's what he was really trying to do. He's trying to figure out what in the hell this thing was and what was inside whatever this thing was.
He ain't never smelled no shit like that before.
I just froze. I obviously just froze and moved the bow up. I mean, certainly I didn't go there to shoot a giraffe, but.
Well,
you know,
people got to understand that is a
over there. They
swing that neck and goodbye.
Mm-hmm. They were taking down some telephone poles. Apparently, they have an affinity for copper wire, and they drag it down and run off with it.
What?
But it was one of the stories the landowners were telling me. Matter of fact, they told the story. Angus told the story to him, and he was complaining. He said, "I wish he'd have shot him." But
so they're copper thieves.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. And the phone lines, apparently they really hate phone lines. So if they can get to a phone line where they can break down a pole, I guess something in it really bugs them.
Wow.
This is just, I don't know this.
That's awesome.
That's just what one of the landowners were saying. But anyway.
This like they know, yeah, right? So, those things like buzz and shit probably. Probably fucks with their ears. Sorry if you're listening.
Yeah, I don't know. Wow,
that's cool, man.
Tell you though that'll get your heart rate up. I want to say we were looking at each other, and he raised back up and backed off, sort of between me and this small watering hole, and he let out this sound, just really loud, kind of gurgling sound, and I have pictures of all of this. because you know, at that point when he backed off, I was able to grab the small. I had a in my one of my cargo pockets had a small digital camera, and out from the side window, the smallest giraffe you've ever seen must have been a yearling. Kind of staggers all clumsily out of the bush, and you would think you could see a giraffe. If a giraffe, you would think if a giraffe is in 20 yards of me, I'm going to see it. And for some reason, you don't. They disappear. And anyway, this little giraffe kind of stumbles out, and mama right behind it.
Aww.
And they all went and had a drink at the watering hole. And then, you know, all the whole time, that bull just staring right at me. And they went, the little baby went, and mama had a drink. And then he literally backed up while looking at me, you know, like, come at me. What's up? You know, then finally had a drink himself and took off. But that was my sunrise, and first sunrise in Africa was complimented by that.
Man, it's so similar that you sit in a blind and write a letter to Seneca. And at the same time, you know, that giraffe is walking with its, you know, daughter or son, you know, thinking the same thing and being protective. And, you know, I mean, that's really neat, man, how even both species still feel that in some similar way, you know?
I guess. I can tell you that when you're that close to a bull giraffe, and it's funny, you see them at a zoo is one thing, but when you see them, and you see telephone poles broken down because they decided to swing their neck and hit it, it'll make you think twice.
Well, give something like the size of that head that's in front of you for somebody. I mean, because we're talking a male African bull giraffe, not a, you know, zoo-kept raised giraffe here.
Well, they made with the pictures, you know, at least Angus, according to him, he said it was 19 foot tall.
Jesus.
So that's
that's two basketball goals, people.
Yeah, I mean, its nose and head are, if you're looking at me, it's like this. I mean, I'm, you know, it's wide.
Yeah, how long is
that? And of course, in my mind's eye, it's probably a lot wider than it actually was, but I was getting a full view.
Shit. And a pissed off bull, too.
It was not happy. You know, Angus on our drive back said, you know what it is that if they're on a lunar cycle or they're on anything, he said, it's very likely that giraffe for the last 10 years has been in that area. And he said that it would be like somebody putting a new chair in your living room where all of a sudden that blind is sitting there and he's not smelling anything threatening, but he said he was just kicking it. Like, what the hell is that? You know,
yeah,
or you'd find something in your yard that hadn't been there before.
Yeah, right.
Right. So it wasn't necessarily me, but who knows what kind of scent was on that blind.
Maybe that's the same deal with the telephone poles. It's like, look, this shit ain't supposed to be here. You know what I mean?
It might be.
I mean, in that, you would know more. Isn't that kind of like what a water buffalo does, right? Like if it doesn't want you around and it gets you, it tries to stomp you as flat as basically it can make you. Like you're not even supposed to be there anymore.
Yeah, they'll do that to their own kind. If their own kind is wounded or if they've decided you're a threat, it will until you're mush, right?
Yeah, a lot of people don't. What's behind you, man?
That's a matter of fact, from that same trip, that's a wildebeest.
Ah, that's a wildebeest.
I shot that wildebeest. Yeah. You've seen the hide.
Yeah, you had that, and then you had the kudu too, right?
No, I let the kudu walk. It just, that's one I didn't really have. I didn't feel like it was an ethical shot, but I have the impala. You know, I shot impala and the wildebeest, and we had... Again, saw a lot of stuff. But
now go back to that when you skipped over the whole ethical shot, man. For a lot of people that, you know, that aren't hunters or whatever, that don't listen, you know, they may see that as some sort of oxymoron idea.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, kudu are a very large animal, and I was hunting with a bow and arrow. And unless I can get something vital that's going to at least minimize suffering, or the, you know, at the worst, try to, You know, the worst thing you want to do is wound an animal and either have it suffer or, you know, and of course, wounded animals don't last long in Africa. But in that case, it was a large bull. I could make out the head and the magnificent horns out there. I mean, and you know me, most of the time if I'm hunting, I'm hunting for meat, but yeah, you're not allowed to bring the meat back over there. So, but the ethical shot part, I just did not have, unless I was going to be willing to shoot through some underbrush, or have an absolutely perfect shot from a difficult location, just to try to reach something vital, with a bow. It never presented itself. He did not come in. He probably stayed there for 30 minutes, didn't like it. And it was sort of this real thick bush veld around and brush. And then it kind of opens up around the watering hole, obviously from just natural animal traffic. And he did not like it. He never presented it. And of course, magnificent animal, but just the last thing I want to do is wound something. And anybody does. And sometimes it happens to some hunters and, you know, where it's just a missed shot. But in this case, I didn't want that to happen. It wasn't even a consideration, actually. It was never presented.
Yeah, dude, you got a lot of stories like that because you have a, is it a Sika or a Sika deer at HHR that have you ever found it? You never took the shot. I know you eyed it a few times. You tracked it. Has it still eluded you? Or no, one time you had it.
No, I got it again.
No, I thought one time, yeah, you had it and let it go. It was kind of like it just wasn't the time or something.
I did. Yeah, it wasn't. It was several factors into that hunting there. But in Africa, that was, you know, especially being out to have to track something somewhere where you don't know where you are, where you've been advised to stay in the blind if at all possible. You know, and to go walking out and certainly wouldn't track till somebody came. But, and, you know, you got to know that they weren't even going to get there until dark. So to take a shot like that or to say, all right, it should go through the brush. And with an arrow, you just don't take that kind of chance. I mean, it's going to deflect, you know, more than likely. So, but the rest did, you know, and it was worth the wait. Got a great impala right at sunset. And that was outstanding. Speaking about losing your mind, you know, I shot that, something that any hunter is proud of when you get a great shot on an animal and it falls right away. I was feeling kind of proud of myself, and Africa will remind you that you really aren't the baddest thing out there. I was real proud of a shot I took on an impala at sunset, and it, you know, wandered about 20 yards away and died. So I waited as bow hunters do and just make sure you're not getting up too soon and pushing the animal just in case it's not. Well, sir, it's dark and I get out there to it and I'm all proud. I take some pictures, lay my bow, and you just heard how the whole day went. And so it was a culmination of everything. And then to get the end of the day with harvesting an impala, which, by the way, is one of the best tasting meats you'll ever have in your life. I remembered that I was kneeling next to a bloody animal in Africa on the plane at night.
Oops. Right?
And that I was, regardless of how proud of yourself you are, it's probably time to go back to the blind where I came from and go sit there.
Right?
Like pray.
That makes you think, dude. You shoot the animal, right, by reputation. You know, you go out. You're like, all right, look. Oh, shit. You totally expose yourself.
Right.
Yeah, I think we're both holding on to delay. Yeah, you just totally expose yourself. You walk out and you go, here I am.
When you hear that lion moan and roar in the distance, you know,
no, I don't.
It reminds you, and it's pitch. And when it's pitch black, I mean, you cannot see anything.
Fuck.
Nothing.
What?
I mean, we're talking new moon, you know, not full moon, right? So yeah. I'm hunting new moon, and it's dark. nothing out there except my little flashlight that I was holding in my hand, right?
And a bleeding Impala.
And a Impala that's, fortunately, that one was, both lungs and part of the heart. But I got, you can say it was a great shot or I was that lucky. But, I was all proud of myself taking little pictures with a flash. And I started thinking to myself, maybe I should not call attention to a fresh kill on the plane.
You think? I love how you said, how you hear a lion in the background. I'm like, no, I have no fucking idea.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm not going to lie to you, that when I saw the headlights coming from a distance, I was like, okay, that's outstanding. I'm still not getting out of the blind till they stop.
I'd be like, what a fucking day for car trouble.
All right. Oh, and it was probably 45 minutes after dark by the time they got there. Oh, so I was,
they were taking bets, bro. They were like, you think the native Irish guy's dead? You think that half Native American, half Irish guy made it? They had bets going on your ass back at camp, dude.
Oh yeah, I would think so. Angus was pretty cool about it. As a matter of fact, on the way back, we saw a carousel take down a small Impala, and a carousel is just a really big wildcat.
Holy shit!
Maybe the size of a German Shepherd.
Whoa!
But that's smaller than a mountain lion or anything like that. But
yeah,
much bigger than a bobcat. Much bigger, like 50, 60 pounds.
Mention its neighborhood is a little bit more hardcore.
Right. Yeah, I'd say so.
Where you from, homie? I'd
say so.
Botswana? Shit. That's a mean-ass cat. Hell no, man.
They're considered pests around there to the landowners for obvious reasons. They're hunting the young,
Like scavenger types trying to get the young calves.
Right. Yeah, you should have been with us today. We found makes you feel eerie. I showed Seneca a bunch of pile of bones. The bear had just stacked up fish and some other things. It was just a big pile of bones. You could see the indentions in the brush where he was laying down eating.
Just chilling, eating some sushi. What a life, bro. I'm going to eat some berries, eat some sushi, hang out in the brush.
I don't know.
You don't get an iPhone, though.
No. Unfortunately, there's still some snow on the mountains. We kind of had a drought here last summer, but if the snow stays, that'll be better for the salmon. Won't dry up some of the smaller rivers.
What's happening up there? Is the water still flowing and all good up there? Salmon look good up there? I mean, everything's still...
Well, Kodiak to me... Now, remember, I've only been here not even a year, so... Kodiak fishing wise is sort of like the Keys in Florida, where you don't have to go far offshore. The drop offs, the shelves are real close. So the halibut fishing is right out of the bay or in the bay, where in other places you're riding 20, 30 miles to get the halibut grounds. So here is everything. You have all kinds of different salmon. You can take bush planes to remote locations for salmon. Yeah, the salmon is some of the best in the world here. I got to tell you, I really didn't dig on salmon. Being a Floridian, we've got some wonderful fish to eat, but just like any other fish, when you eat it fresh, it's outstanding. The red salmon are that's what's fun, is you get a run of king salmon and pink salmon and red salmon and silvers late in the year. So it's kind of nice to be able to. And what's weird, this will make Floridians kind of start sweating, but hunting season opens August 1st here. And I would not want to hunt in August in Florida.
No, God. You'd sweat and die. No, you'd fall out, man. That's the other part. You know, it's a lot of some people, you know, stick with hunting, and you know, some people stick with fish, and some people go both. And I would say this though, and that's what, you know, we're talking hunting here in Alaska and so far, you know, but truth be told, dude, put you in a boat in salt water, and there's probably not another person out there, another captain out there, and I mean it, that I'd rather be stuck A, in a storm with, or B, going fishing with, or just stuck with beer with, you know. And you know, that's the other side that you've done most of your life. You, from guiding on the Indian River here in Orlando or Titusville, you fished that forever. You were a guide on there forever. I mean, in the Keys, dude, I mean, you in the boat in the saltwater, brother, I mean, fuck, that's some of the best times you and I have ever fucking had. And I mean, I love it. It's some of the best times you and I fishing like that, man.
Well, you're awful kind to say that. I'm a novice compared, especially some of the captains here that navigate these waters. But that's very kind of you. And I'll second that. Matter of fact, I was thinking the other day, you had just gotten off we were still within cell range. And the weather turned nasty. Remember, I called you from the boat.
Yeah, you FaceTimed me with Coach.
Yeah, so Coach was good enough to. We were, matter of fact, in a troll near a place, Woody Island, which is close because it was nasty offshore. But I was thinking about wanting to get out there. You know, any time I can get close to the abyss, you know, we feel better. And
the abyss, bro.
You know, you and I rode out that day. You know, 35 miles past the reef or 30 miles. We were way out. And you see those upwellings that cause all this weird stuff. Remember the circle? It was almost like a perfect circle.
Oh, dude, that
shit. Rip current and waves we saw out there that day, yeah.
Dude, and that fucking day. I love that day. Dude, I'm glad you went there, bro. I love that day, man. I mean, 35 miles we go out, and we're in, how big was your pro line?
The boat we went out in was 23.
Fucking little. We're in a 23-foot boat, 35 miles offshore. And explain to people, I can't tell you guys if you're listening, when he says upswells, how fucking wicked this shit looks. When you can't see land, you're in 1,200 foot of water. It's the fucking abyss, bro. It is just deep out there. And these upswells where you're in this calm water and then patches of it is just like, it's a fucking hurricane. And like little rolling huge waves and white caps and shit in these upswells, and you got to kind of navigate around them. Holy fuck.
Yeah, that was pretty wicked that day. That deep blue stuff, you know. And the shallow something like that would be the canyon off of Duck Key, for those of you who fish offshore know where I'm talking about. You know, where it drops from 500 to 900 and creates all kinds of great currents to fish in there. But you know, where we were at that day, we were straight out. We went a little bit east, but we were pretty much due south, out of there, you know, headed towards Cuba, but, sort of speaking.
We were just fishing.
That's true.
We were just fishing.
Mm-hmm. No, that was a good day.
Yes, that was a very good day. We didn't find anything. We were just fishing.
That's right.
Oh, man, if anybody understands, man, promise you we were fishing. But, man, you know, I talked about that the other day when, you know, being out in that storm. You know, I always quote that song, "When the waves turn the minutes to hours, bro." And I don't know, probably like I can never imagine what Africa felt like. But when you're out there like that, it does remind you. It's just like you are so small and insignificant at a point, you know. And I think every man and woman needs to feel that shit once in their life, you know. Feel fucking number four on the food chain once in your fucking life, you know.
Yeah. For me, I think for any hunter, you mentioned Heath was listening. And there's two guys, if we're around a campfire with something to drink, there's a plenty of stories to share.
Yeah, Heath has been posting heavy on Facebook. You know, So if anybody's listening, man, go to our Facebook, Heath Broadway, post some stuff of him and his kid. Yeah, sorry, man. I didn't mean to interrupt. Just giving a little shout out to him.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Hunter's definitely. He'll figure out how valuable all those things he's learning is, even more so as he gets older. But awful proud of how he's learning about the outdoors. Can't wait till they get here. Hunting here is, you know, if anywhere you go, it's way different climate-wise and terrain-wise. You enjoy that experience because you're now the novice. You're now the explorer rather than hunting places you know really well.
Yeah, man. I you know, we were talking, you know, feeling that primal, you know, that moment. You know, I'm going to tell a little story myself. And to speak to that primal feeling, you know, when I first kind of was dating my wife now, and we went out over to Memaw's place over at the Indian River there. And, you know, I'm going to take a girl who I'm dating fishing first. You know, I got to see if she can go fishing with me, if I can hang out with her. You know what I mean? And so it's like a champ, dude. She goes wading with me. Yeah, wading. She goes wading. I'm teaching, you know, how you got to drag your feet for the skates, you know. And, you know, I grew up doing it, brother. I mean, I'm going to a little ADHD stretch back here. For all those of you listening, some of my favorite times when I could get away from my house is my big brother would pile me up in one of his fucking trucks, and we would leave at like 5 in the fucking morning for a 10-year-old. That's like never, you know. So I'm half asleep on the drives over so many times in my life, man. And we would go wading, and we would fish the Indian River backwards from Mosquito Lagoon to everywhere up and down that place. And we would kill it. We'd catch fish. And on the way home, man, it was Hank Williams fucking Jr. and boiled fucking peanuts. And those are some of the best times of my childhood, you know, that I can ever, that I can still remember after hitting my head so much, for one. But but they stick to me, man. And so I'm over at the Indian River, and we take her fishing. We're gonna hang out, so we're wading, and I don't know, maybe 100-200 yards, I don't know, 100 yards offshore, maybe off the little land there. We're wading pretty decently, and I don't know, we kind of turn to start to come back, and I'm maybe mid-thigh deep, and just two fishing poles, and between us and land, a gigantic V starts to swim basically between us, cutting us off at about 50 yards from us and land as we're trying to make our way back in. And being head fishing it so long since I was a kid with you, I know that this is a very large saltwater fucking crocodile. And I know that that's what that thing is. And, you know, the difference is that, you know, the crocs are more aggressive than your typical alligator would be. And I have nothing but a little fillet knife on me and a fishing pole, and the V turns toward us and is coming directly at us. And I go, well, this ought to be fun for your first fucking date, dude. You know? And truth be told, I grabbed the two fishing poles. I don't know if this would even fucking work, dude. I mean, you could tell me I'm retarded, but I don't know. She got behind me. I said, just stand behind me. I put the two fishing poles crossways in the water to where at least maybe the mouth would get in the way, you know, of the fishing pole or something, and turn one of the knives upside down. And I'm like, all right, here we go, baby. And in that moment, it probably swam 3 feet in front of me and stops and just looks at me. And I'm looking at it. Now, mind you, like your draft story, it feels like a fucking hour. But it's like, you know, right. It's 10 seconds, and my, you know, my now wife is behind me, my girlfriend at the time. I think we were just dating, and drops underwater, and I'm thinking, here we go. And I feel a little whip on my tail, on my calf, and it pops up past us as if it was like, you can live. And man, did we go scooting, skate shuffling our asses all the way across. Getting the hell out of there, man. And in that moment, I went upstairs, built a website in 24 hours called primalnature.net and .us. And what I wanted to do was share that experience with as many people as I could, because I thought I had never felt more free in my life. You know, we've been in places in the ocean from spear and fish and hunting and lobstering, etc. But in that moment, nothing mattered. Nothing mattered at all. And I felt so free that I was like, I want to share this with everyone. Everyone should feel this.
Yeah, those are the If you know what it's like to be completely cut off, I would say that it should be part of, I think the mistake that we make is the habit of needing to be, and it sounds cliche, but I think we need to develop the habit, a training habit. You know, you talked about it on a, you and a guest talked about it on a previous podcast that I really liked, because you're starting to open up the way you train yourself, like you train your body. And you, it's necessary. Protein is necessary to the body. I think it's necessary to have that connection and at the same time disconnect from all that we create and the connect, you know, when you're out there in the woods, any hunter, to finally unplug and really unplug, even to be somewhere you cannot call someone if you wanted to, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you. The video's lagging a little bit, brother. Just don't pay any attention to it. It's just lagging a little bit. We got a few more viewers. I started adding on, and so our bandwidth is just lagging a little bit. The video will catch up, but we're still live as it gets. And then we were not. About the time I said that, we took on hundreds of viewers through multiple sources, and we were not prepared for that. And it crashed the live broadcast of the podcast. We still have some of the audio on the back end, which we substituted here, but I had to jump in to be able to tell you, and I hated it because it was just getting to that deep conservation part. But we picked back up right where we were. It was about a 6-minute drop where we lost everybody and everything, and we were able to pull it back up. So we pick up there. I apologize for this interruption, but I did not expect that many viewers last night. So thank you. Thank you. I guess thank you for crashing the podcast is what I'm saying. Yeah. Back to the show. Welcome back, people, to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. And in case you missed everything that we were talking about, holy gosh, we covered too many hunting stories. No, not enough hunting stories, actually. And we were just actually, man, starting to get to talking about the idea of bringing the idea of being primal or third or fourth on the food chain once in your life, but at the same time you started to talk about the conservation aspect and bringing those together about what that meant, big bro.
I think I was just touching on, I think it's important for everybody to decide what their own definition of conservationist means. And that, you know, one of your guests, we're talking about tolerance, and for me, seeing two extremes, especially from Alaska to Florida, you see both sides and all viewpoints. And that part of tolerance means understanding the definition of and the, you know, what's behind that. And many hunters will say, and I've heard some interesting comments as I traveled through airports trying to pick up my favorite shows and make comments such as how can hunters be conservationists, things like that. And if you're not well enough read into what's actually preserving land, like in Africa, you know, in fact, it is the hunters and that economic scale that is preserving the wildlife over there when they become valuable, like that to microeconomies and even for them, what they would consider by definition macro, then if that's real conservation, you know, to say, here's how my personal practice is when I hunt or if I hunt or whatever you decide to do for your family. I think that it's important to decide what kind of conservationist you are if and what you're doing holistically for it. And most hunters get it. Most fishermen get it. Some don't, and that's too bad. But, you know, in this case, for our kids, and I think of Hunter all the time, Hunter Broadway.
Hey, shout out to Hunter Broadway. If you guys want to see my big man, I think Heath posted some good stuff about him, or a good picture of him up on the Facebook, too. So shout out to Heath Broadway and his son, Hunter.
We definitely. I think some of the things that Heath and I were taught, you know, obviously we're passing down, but as the world changes and available land changes, species management theory and practice changes, you see sort of, at least I've only got a small view of it because I've only been here a short time, of, you know, what Alaska considers best practice. I mean, the economy here is 80% commercial fishing. So, and in some places, in Florida is a great example, where we've just used the resource up to the point of it's gone, or it's not harvestable anymore if we're going to rebuild it. Redfish was an example. Where, and here in Kodiak, believe it or not, king crab is that way. It was 70s or so. And later, really, as I'm told, it just fished out the king crab. Well, the currents and things bring those animals here. It's not like they spawn and they come back here. It's also wherever those eggs were released in the current. All of those things are a factor. So it's interesting to learn that. And I think it kind of shapes your definition of conservation. Conservation is saving animals in Africa right now. Hunting is saving animals. Not just saying we're not going to hunt anymore, but the fact that you can bring American dollars in, American hunters into those economies to provide more protection, to prevent poaching, to prevent a lot of that needless, and that really is killing and not necessarily harvesting. For example, we took the animals that we harvested. Matter of fact, that wildebeest is an example, according to Angus, and we took that to a village. And before we went, two of those guys had that wildebeest stripped down in minutes, and we toted them off, and we had a big party, so to speak, that night. So,
and how many
define it however you want, but it needs to be defined within your family, like another value would be defined in your family.
Yeah, I like that. How many people did that wildebeest feed that day?
Oh my goodness, easily 75 people.
Starving people too.
You know, I'm not. I don't know the other than what I could see, but certainly protein is valued. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you'd almost wish they could find another way. And a lot of people, shit, you and I even debated about this back in Marco for a while about the conservation and does it keep it, and do the dollars dictate the life? Do the dollars dictate the breath, etc.? And unfortunately, it does, and especially on the poaching trade. And so what they're poaching, what they're taking, that's the dollar amount on the other side that controls it. And so as people want to argue that, hey, why do we need American dollars to come in here on hunting to make this conserve or to conserve these animals, et cetera? It's because the dollars on the other side on the black market are so expensive and so wide and vast that it's almost, you almost have to combat, you know, with the same weapon.
Yeah. I think you just define part of the long-term struggle. And developing tolerance within your own definition of conservation or hunting or whatever that may be, certainly we'd like to think that no one is killing wastefully, but we know it happens. And that really does come from money. And there's a small percentage of people that, unfortunately, ones that make the headlines that are wasteful. And then that's the best word I can probably say publicly. But
no, you can say what the fuck you want on this show, dude.
Well, perhaps, but
yeah, true. Well,
you have some fans in Kodiak too, and that's I'll leave it there.
Okay. Well, you speak to another conservation side that too I would pick up is, you know, you and I, since we were little, were, you know, marathoners in August and mini season and bugging and shooting fish, and those of you that are listening that do this too, you understand. And you know, it was so plentiful, you know, when we were younger, and as we got older, you know, if you go now, good luck. You know, you got to have the right holes, but even then it's so overpicked. And even back then, bro, I'm not going to put any names out there, but you know who the fuck you are, who you were a member of the little crew that we go down there with, and they would pour bleach in the holes. They would take shorts. They would bag them up elsewhere. They would take animals. They would limit once, bring them back, go back out, limit 3-4 times a day. And so many had done this for so many years that, brother, lobster season's just, it's just not almost the same anymore. I don't know if it'll ever be.
You know, that's an interesting example of what we do oftentimes. And it's one of the few examples. It's easy to point to commercial fishermen. I think they're an easy target, although they are doing most of the time what's allowed by law. So we as citizens have voted for how much fish they can take. If you want that changed, then, and Florida Sportsman does a good job of this, follow the law and vote accordingly. And we are responsible for, we are responsible as citizens for that. When you're talking about a very sensitive, localized species, or at least localized in the U.S., there's, you know, they go on range to the Caribbean and all, but the lobster thing has really evolved to where, I mean, I haven't done it in years on purpose, partly because of the mass and the people that come down, and many are enjoying themselves, and it's a great family activity. Except when you run into, you see people parking on the same lobster hole as if they own it. And trust me, if you have the number and it's a hole that's anywhere close to shore or close to the Keys, somebody else has it too. And if they're there, leave them alone. And, you know, I mean, it's, and, you know, you hear these horror stories these days out of, you know, with friends that I have still down there that, it's just not worth it. They wait till everybody leaves. Even if they don't get to harvest many, that's okay. You know, it's not about that. I mean, I think if you add up, especially if you add up all the money you spend to go do that activity, if it was just about the meat, you could just go to the store and buy a box of lobster and save yourself. If that's how you're going to measure that activity, to go stay somewhere, go enjoy the Keys for the Keys. You know, make sure you can enjoy it with your family and things like that. We were fortunate enough to learn how to do all those activities, but we also understand, you just mentioned one, the folks that don't, it's a renewable resource so long as we take care of where everything lives, you know.
And you don't see that. I mean, you would see a lot of destruction down there, man. And I get that. And you lived in the Keys for some time too, so you kind of became a conk yourself there for a while, you know.
I wasn't there long enough to call myself that, but certainly when you live there, it's a different story when you see folks. You know, it made me feel a little guilty. You know, we always did very well. I'd like to say we were responsible stewards of the environment, and where we were. We respected where we were. We also saw things that didn't. Let's just take it for what it's worth and go back to our place in the city. You know, the Keys are a sensitive, like Kodiak, a very sensitive environment, like Marco Island, an estuary and breeding ground. So how easy is it to, we could go on for days on that subject. But, you know, I'd love to take Seneca and Hunter and those down there and do that activity. But in the season, so to speak, I'm not sure I'd ever do that.
Yeah, it can get dangerous too, because the people that are in the water operating the vehicles, driving, not even driving around the island drunk, but a lot of people with those boats don't know what the fuck they're doing, and you know, they're driving all over the place. I mean, it can be a dangerous activity, and you know, there's so many people, and it almost became like this competition thing, more or less, than let's be with the family and get some good meat and enjoy the experience.
You know, you just hit it. I think that's the part of that you mature to as well. I mean, for example, 2 weeks ago, the last time we had sun, I sent a note to you. We drove out the road, and as they say here, in other words, where the road ends. And I actually passed the Y. We went to a beach, and you know, here with the rocks and stuff on the beach, you're allowed to build a fire right there on the beach. And I can tell you, we saw three other humans that day, probably a couple miles from us or a mile from us down this particular beach. Took the ATVs out, rode it up and down the beach, and you know, a lot of either volcanic sand or it's rock, and rivers, you know, flowing into it, and the scenery is incredible. And it wasn't about wildlife that day, other than what might have shown up, you know what I mean? It was about that part of the scenery and learning and pointing out tracks and things like that. And that's what I like about kind of what the younger generation, listen to me, I sound like an old guy, is doing with hunting and the outdoors. I see it in Kodiak. I mean, if you watch that Kodiak video I sent you, people are just coming here to hike and explore, nothing else. And it's part of that lifestyle that is smart. You're taking vacations, but healthy ones, and getting out. And, you know, I challenge anyone, come to Kodiak, breathe the air, or Alaska in some places, away from oil, of course. Come and breathe the air. And then when you go back home, when that plane door opens and you're in the city, whatever, it's Chicago, Orlando, Miami, feel the difference. You know, and then, and, you know, from the time you get off the plane here, or when you fly in, and you'll be hopefully flying in soon, and you see that landscape, and you cross the Gulf of Alaska, and all of a sudden in the middle of the Pacific, there's a massive island with a glacier in the middle and mountains and so forth. And that door opens, you say, okay, you start to go, wow, all right, that's why I came here, you know. And I'm hoping that families share that too. I'm hoping it gets more affordable. I'm hoping, and that all ties into to making that activity so many times. Like you just touched on something. When you rush down to get you see the people rush down for the weekend or whatever. Let's get as many lobsters as we can and go home and do whatever. I'm missing the point, you know. You're missing the point of the whole activity if you're doing that as a family. I get it. Trust me. We go on meat trips as far as fishing and so forth, and that's important too.
When it's time to meet, brother, and we're on the boat and we're going out fishing and it's meat, you know, Katie bar the door, as my mom would say, it's about to get crazy.
Well, yeah, you know, and then you define it. Dolphin is a good example. I still have to remind myself while I'm here and I say the word dolphin that we're going dolphin fishing down there. That it's mahi-mahi, as they call it on the West Coast in Hawaii here. So
not flipper.
right. But isn't that an example? Are you going to go take an entire school, you know, of schoolies that are going to be three times that size the same time next year, you know, because they grow so fast? Or are you going to just take every one of those little ones? I mean, I really wish that Florida would probably folks throwing stuff at the TV at me right now, but I really wish they would either change that minimum limit or the bag limit. But, you know, fishermen have a point. If you're going to change the commercial harvest, then you should make that. Then change the recreational harvest or simultaneously do both. But I think that any dolphin fishermen out there would say that the dolphin by number are getting smaller as you catch them. Mm. And if you decide to, you know, keep 50 schoolies, because you got five people or whatever it is on your boat now. I don't remember what it is right now. It used to be 10 per person. That defines it. That's how what we're talking about by defining conservation. At what point do we say we could keep all of these fish, or we could take enough for what we need and enough, put a few bags in the freezer of the larger fish or whatever, even if you keep a few of the schoolies. But you know, what are you doing on what are you doing to that migration if hundreds of boats plus commercial harvest happens?
Yeah, that's that personal call, man. You know, you can, I think you're right, Florida sportsmen and Florida Fishing Game, they try to do some things to control it, but I think there has to be that personal responsibility of conservation in your own heart and in your own mind, to where I think you, because you pass that down. And what scares me most is not so much those that are already stuck in their ways of that's how they treat nature when they're in it, but it's how they pass that torch to the young ones. And if you pass it down to your own kids of the ideas, harvest whatever you want as much as you can, whatever's legal, stack it up and don't fucking worry about the rest and fill up the freezer and then call it taking care of your own family, there is an issue there. There needs to be that personal. That's what scares me is you should pass down that love and appreciation for the animal, for the nature, for what it gives you, and not just for what you can take from it.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly don't. It's within folks that are doing that, and we've had our days where we go out and our freezer's empty and we want to keep 20 fish. We do. You know, but nowadays it's a little different. You say, all right, I would keep 10 or 20 or say 10 of the larger or whatever, and leave the school. I mean, how many times have we, the last several years, the last 10 years, pulled up to a school that were possibly legal, but said, all right, let's just leave them alone.
Yeah.
Because every one of them was 2021, you know.
Yeah, many times. They've so. Schooled around the boat and filled us around it, and we're looking at the yellow and green streaks through the blue water going, nah, man, peanuts, bro. Peanuts, man. Let's keep rolling.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, and who cares if you're, especially if you're using the right hooks, if you want your, if you got kids on board, you know, something that, that you mentioned Heath and the rest of us get, if you're, they've got a promotion out here on outdoors, and then they've got a different camp out here for kids in the summer, a salmon camp where, you know, they start understanding what it takes to, for an egg to hatch. Cause they'll go to the hatcheries, they'll do the weir counts and things like that. But, and that's one, I think, taking both those avenues, the educational part of the avenue into the outdoors for kids. And the second is, if you're going to take them fishing, catch something if you can. Make it happy. You know, make it, you know, if you're going to fish all day and here's in Florida, and you fish all day and it's great being outdoors. And who cares? Some kids don't need that. But if you've got little kids, you know, let the rod bend. Put the fish back. Keep a few if you want. But that very first time you take them, you know, it's always think about what, even if it's just bluegill and panfish and you're having a ball with that, just make the rod bend, you know.
Dude, I'm going to write that on the cave wall for you for your saying in the cave wall, man. Make the rod bend, man. Make the rod bend, man. I mean, you did it with my daughter Morgan, man, when we were down in the, in Marco, and we were going out all the time in a boat with you, man, and fishing. We remember she hooked up on one of them big ass sharks, man. And we put that on video, and boy, did the rod bend for her for a while, man.
Well, she hooked probably the biggest spinner shark I've ever seen.
Yeah, we were talking about some sort of state record, maybe.
And to be in 8 foot of water like that, in that little channel in the south end, I mean, the folks that live there know where I'm talking about all the way at the end, and past the ruins, south of the ruins. You know, that was a very large spinner shark, and I'm not real sure what the record is on that fish, but for her age group, sure got me thinking. And to come out of the water like it did, and like everybody, if you've ever hooked a spinner shark, it's an acrobatic display. But yeah, her jaw dropped. She forgot to reel.
Right on the video, I think we're both going reel down, pull up, reel down, pull up.
We never even, and yeah, we tried that, but we're, yeah, it's, you know, I'm sure, and I can't wait to, when you first walk out here and you see the salmon in the bays of the stream, or, and you see them come in like that, with that anticipation. You know, when I took Seneca down here, we just stopped at, when she first got here, at the Buskin River, and just to see it, and it takes their eyes a minute. Especially because when I took her down, there must have been 60 of them in this little stream, in this pool. And it kind of got deep, and it took her a minute, and she said, oh, there's a lot of rocks over there. I said, they're not rocks. Those are fish. They're all stacked in there, and her eyes light up, and then she focuses, and she sees everything now. And, you know, we got lucky enough to catch a few different species that day, but that's what I'm talking about. When you see that and they see that and you see them light up, you know, and now she's ready to go rabbit hunting. We were hoping to do that today, but
yeah. Also, is Seneca already go? No, she's not in bed over there, man. She hanging around there.
She is not within.
Oh, well, anyway. Yeah, don't worry about it. We hang out. You know, you were talking about some of that. I'm glad that we at least got this far into a podcast where we got to tell one story to where we got to act like maybe it was a record of some kind. We actually told a fish record story, man.
There's been a few. We've been fortunate. Yeah.
Well, are you thinking about the same gigantic ladyfish to which you became my damn dude. That was hilarious, man. We're in a fucking canoe and fishing the Indian River like always, and we're in a canoe and I hooked this massive, which at first we think is a tarpon, and I'm on, I don't know what, I had probably little light tackle on, man. I was very light because he almost spooled me, and before he could spool me, you leap out of the motherfucking canoe in about 5.5 foot water, and the water's kind of just coming up underneath you a little bit. You're struggling. Forget sliding your feet in the stingrays, and you go traipsing with the damn canoe in the front trying to put line back on the reel as I'm cranking all I can crank, and you're like, this is a big fucking tarpon or something, I don't know. And then I think we realize it's a ladyfish as it gets closer, and we get it in, and obviously, you know, we're fishermen, we understand what a ladyfish is. It was just holy shit. But this thing laid across the cooler, bro. Here's another fish story where I get to tell the size of it.
Mm-hmm. It was by far the biggest ladyfish I've ever seen. I thought it was going to be your first tarpon.
Mm.
And there's a lot of juvenile tarpon in that part of the river that go that most people don't even fish for. Matter of fact, I hope they're still there. They're very rare to catch in that area of river. And I thought you had hooked one of those tarpon, and I did not want you to lose that your first tarpon.
Yeah.
And where we were, we had a moment. I remember what you're saying. And when I actually saw that it was a ladyfish, I could not believe it. And ladyfish are absolutely fun to catch. You know, local anglers will tell you that, you know, they call it the poor fisherman's tarpon or whatever they want to call it. But they are fun to catch. And especially if you fish the winter time in that stretch of the river and from Port St. John up, that can be just a fun time. You know, after you get some, you know, and catch some trout, fine, but, you know, get over there and let the kids watch the fish jump and go nuts. And when you hook that one, that's still today the biggest ladyfish I've even ever seen.
That thing was massive, dude. I mean, we had a few, so many first times, man. You know, what got me I can picture Seneca too, because she's all into the nature, man, and she can see that. And it may be a little more, for me, when I went down young and I used a Hawaiian sling and I shot my first grouper and then my first hogfish, brother, that was when my eyes lit up. That's when I was like, wait, I can go down with this pointy stick in a rubber band, no gun, no spear gun, none of that bullshit. And I shoot that thing, and I just pop out of the water holding the fish. I was like, this is fucking awesome.
Right.
Yeah, that's when my eyes light up, man. We got to do another spearfishing trip or something, man, you know, coming up this summer down in the Key. We got to go do something. I haven't hit anything with a Hawaiian sling in too long.
I saw one here the other day. You're not going to believe this, but there's a surfing club here.
What?
And, yeah.
In Alaska?
They surf. Yeah, in Kodiak. Yeah, they surf here.
Okay.
And there's a surf shop, and you wouldn't believe it. And, of course, there's no way they're going to get me to do that in this cold water.
Crazy.
And because I don't care how thick your wetsuit is, your face is exposed, and you're, you know.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, the quarterback of our football team here, he surfs all the time. And he said, well, you just, when your feet go numb, that's when you leave and you go warm up. But
well, look, my hat's off to those Kodiak boys anyway. These are the same kids that, hey, if you're listening, go to our YouTube channel, find it on the podcast. We did a 4-part episode series we called The Boys of Kodiak, way before, NFL did their Barrow story on the people, on the boys in Alaska. We were doing the boys of Kodiak in Alaska months and months before they shot Barrow. But you can go watch that, listen to that series, and listen what these boys go through when they travel from football to football game. But so, I mean, those are the kind of kids you're dealing with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they don't. Tell somebody in Texas, in a big school in Texas or Florida or wherever, that we're going to board you on a ferry boat a few hours before it leaves. You have to then, the next thing you have to do is go stake out your spot on the ferry, which typically the ferry puts us in depending on which ferry it is, puts us in a specific place. And really, it's just kids laying down sleeping bags or laying on the floor or whatever. And then you're going to go ride for 14 hours once you leave, in whatever seas happen to be out there. Then you're going to get on a bus for 7 hours, a school bus for 7 hours, and then get there. You're going to get a few hours rest, and then you're going to go play a football game. And then you're going to do it all over again when the football game's over. And they don't see that, man. They just, they're getting off the island. They're going to enjoy. They're with their team. Of course, they're tired.
I saw the one kid tied himself to a pole on the ferry so he wouldn't roll around on the floor trying to sleep.
Yeah, the top there's on one of the ferries, there's a room up there that they put us in, and it's all the way at the top. And of course, it, you know, does this number.
Yeah.
And if you don't tie your stuff down, it's no telling where it's going to be if you fall asleep and wake up, or where you'll be when you wake up, depending on the sea. So, you know, they're all, it's quite an interesting thing, especially, you know, when, if it's been a rough ferry ride, you get there, they're getting off the ferry puking, and then they got to go get in a school bus and ride for hours, and they're still sick. And if any of you have ever been seasick, imagine having to play a football game a few hours after you got through, or right after. We've had kids puke as they're walking out to the football field.
Oh, my God.
And still seasick, and they're going to go run down on kickoff coverage.
Yeah, so definitely, y'all, go listen to that, man. That you wouldn't see any football player in Florida, California, Texas, top recruit school going through any of that. For one, they got tons of money, wouldn't have to do it. But, I mean, that's the kind of love for it, man. I mean, and that's the kind of people that, you know, is what you've been telling me the whole time is existing up in Alaska. You know, those kind of people, those the hard worker, the tough, kind, polite, you know, give you a shirt and take you hunting and fishing at the same time.
Yeah, it's a different culture here for sure. And there's the strange thing is that it's extremely diverse where we are in Kodiak, and you wouldn't think that. It's a diverse area with Native population, Asian population, Filipino, and all. I mean, you know, you look at a school, that'll give you a nice picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the demographic, and it's. I will say it's one of the things that, at least from the outside looking in, the community does well. I mean, everybody's making a living. Everybody's when our athletes whine here, our student athletes whine, it's usually not about what you would expect them to whine about.
So, right. So anything on the future agenda, bro? What's on the next outdoor trip? Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here because I want to. I mentioned...
It's your show.
Yeah, well, I mentioned the primalnature.us and primalnature.net, et cetera, and building that website. And I'd like to, in the summer, man, really talk about doing a show with you and starting something with you up there on the primal basis. And, you know, showing people, you know, Alaska and getting them outdoors up there in Kodiak, man.
Well, that'd be great. I think that's where I've been looking forward to. You know, I got here late summer last year, and to be able to be here when the Kings first come in, you know, that's going to be a lot of fun. And when we have gotten out, you know, there was a good cod season here, pollock, and some resident, you still have some resident Kings that stay here year round. They're kind of few and far between, but apparently they're already starting to show up offshore.
Dude, that rock.
So that kind of gets you excited.
No, my bad. That rockfish, the rockfish that you sent me that's on my Instagram that I took a picture of, I took it pre-prepped and then caught, and then the picture of you catching that fish. And so you can go to our Instagram at Cognitive Rampage and see. But that rockfish, dude, when you sent me that, oh, my God, that was like butter. That shit was so good.
It is. You know, and kudos to Coach McGuire for putting us on that day. And it's funny how the tastes vary, because he'll joke about me like in the rockfish, and I'll joke about him like in some of the other salmon and so forth. But I know my whole family likes it. And when you see it coming in here, when you talk about fresh salmon, I literally can go to Menasha or go to the Buskin 10 minutes away, yank the fish out of the water, be back home in 10-15 minutes. And within an hour, that fish has been swimming, caught, filleted, eaten within an hour.
So that's kind of
nice.
Yeah, man. See, that's people take that for granted. You know, I miss that about Marco Island the most, is when I lived there and I had the kayak, man, it could be a Tuesday at fucking 2. I had that tide app on my phone. I would check the tide and go like, you know what? That thing's about to go out or come in. I could put that kayak in on any edge of that island, dude, and go out there and catch food. And I just reel right back in, go cook it that night, man. I miss the hell out of that on Marco Island, man.
Well, you got pretty adept at those areas with the kayak. Yeah, that kind of living, that kind of, I got to tell you, that's the one thing that Kodiak's, you know, it's better than. You just missed an ermine. It's a type of weasel just ran by the screen. you can tell who's hunters and fishermen on the front. They catch movement.
But, right. You're sitting on a podcast going, we got movement to the right here.
Yeah, that's right. I did that the other night. I looked out, and right outside the window, there were three deer. And yeah.
Do they know who you are?
Yeah, when there's protein that close. Huh?
I said, do they know whose yard they're hanging out in?
Not yet.
All right.
Not yet.
All right.
One of them will when the season opens.
Oh, see? Already been marked. He's been marked.
Oh, yeah. No question. no question about it.
That'll feed the family for a good what?
That'll be a good one. You know, blacktailer. I always wondered the difference and eating them from whitetail, since I would guess that most of the viewers are lower 48. I'm going to tell you, you will forget about whitetail when you eat blacktail deer.
No kidding.
And they're really the same, a lot of them the same from the same species, but, and maybe it's also the difference in what they're eating, but you know, I love whitetail, and especially one that's been eating acorns or corn or things like that. But, I can tell you that blacktail deer is tender right off the bone. We filleted it right here. And, I say filleted it like a fish. We did get fish that day. That's why I said that we got the deer and then limited on silver salmon and came home.
Wow.
All in about 2 hours.
So I'm in a podcast studio, man. Shit. See, that's when a podcast studio is not that cool anymore.
No, we need to broadcast from out there. You know, I was testing the bandwidth, and we've got some kids that are from the Coast Guard base that play ball.
Yeah.
So they said, hey, maybe we could get access and shoot from out there, but actually be out there behind, you know, in the outdoors behind the base and sort of the mountains behind there. If we could get close enough, we could still get a signal.
Dude, yeah. I think we should do it. We should start preparing for it now and start in your channel, the Primal Nature channel, and start a video show out in Kodiak.
It would be interesting. I know there's so much here to go and see. And I'll, especially if we can get that by summer. Looks like I'm sort of.
Yeah, that was funny. You were leaning to the right and you had horns all of a sudden. You had Impala horns.
Yeah, that's a hems buck.
Oh, the hems buck.
They say they're a gems buck. Yeah.
You know what? That's what I got confused with the kudu. That's what I got confused. You had the hems buck hanging up, not the kudu. That's right.
Yeah, let's see.
This is a very lovely room of death.
Shout out to Jesse. and Ace Ventura.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, your eagle came back.
He's hanging with me.
Yeah, you're right there.
He knows we're live.
They hunt the shoreline with the wind blowing in, so.
If you could come back as any animal when you die, bro, what animal would you want to come back as?
Oh, man. You just did the whole Joe Buck thing in the interview. Divert the whole thing and throw a crazy question out there.
Oh, man. Which one would you be, bro?
I don't know. It would have to be a, not because I feel like one, but because I'd like to be near the top of the food chain.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
So whether land or sea, I'd like to be near the top of the food chain.
Yeah. Top would be fine. Top would be fine.
I would say something like that. If it were sea, an orca or something like that. On land or air, yeah.
Yeah, I think I don't know.
Nice to fly.
Yeah. See, when you started talking bald eagle out there hunting the cliffs and coastlines, I was like, I think I could do that.
Yeah. It's kind of cool right here. I kept waiting to see one tonight so we could get it on the show. But there's a literally steps away from me right now. If I walk through that window or out the back door, it's 10 or 15 steps, and it's 90 feet straight down granite cliff.
Man, and how about this? How
if I open that door?
Oh, my bad. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, and what will happen is the wind's coming off the ocean right now. They get that updraft up the cliff. So the eagles, you know, if they're out in front, will hover over the house. Because they're getting that updraft, and they don't have to work. They just stay in the updraft and just go back and forth up and down the cliff, hunting the fish getting blown in.
Man.
Until they start fighting. And angry. You know, I had one hit a raven. I got raven feathers in my backyard. I guess he got upset that the raven was hanging around, and they squawking at each other. And next thing I saw, that eagle came down like an F-22 and hit that raven midair and just
oh, he just said, bam.
This is my cliff. I see you got some bears behind you there.
Yeah. But, oh, shit. Yeah, I do. Now, see, in
I'm
Alaska.
I'm going to tell you what feels dwarfed.
No, I'm about to cut in. I was going to tell you, in Alaska, that sentence means a whole different thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll get your attention. Yeah. You know, Coach McGuire took us back. We went 20-some miles into the wilderness back there off of the American River and the Olds River place, and then we drove around to a place called Saltry. When you're going that far out there, it will – I went to a spot, and I see an entire pool, flowing water, beautiful, clear glacial water or snowmelt water. It's just to – tinge of blue, and it's the water's thick with red salmon. Just they're sockeye, but they haven't turned. They're bright salmon, and that's the ones you want to eat. You don't eat them if they're red and with the hook jaw and all that. Bears don't care, but anyway, they were bright salmon, so I'm all excited and catch my first one. I sent you a picture. The second one, some of the fellas, and this was Coach McGuire again, shout out to him. You know, using the fly rod, catching them. And I'm all excited. And then I walk down river and I look down at my foot, and my foot is inside a bear track.
Oh.
And I want you to think, you know, I wear 11 4E. And I have square feet. And my foot is inside the bear track. And it will make you think, you go, okay. And we were in a pretty thick spot. So,
yeah.
And actually, Coach got run off of that spot a couple weeks prior. Bear ran him out of there. They had to get in the ATV and take off.
And man, and, thank God you had the ATV to even be able to take off in.
Yeah, I was unfortunately in a spot across the river. You know me. I mean, Coach went further down. And, you know, I started thinking, you know, even if I wanted to get out of here at this point in time, I'm not going anywhere. You know?
Yeah.
You know? So from a Florida guy, and, you know, and the folks here and the coach and the rest, you know, sort of like getting grown up around alligators. Everybody, especially in Florida, if you've grown up around alligators, you say, and folks that come from out of town are afraid of them.
Yeah.
And, but you respect it. And we've waited around alligators before and not worried about it. And, you know, we understand aggressive behavior and those kind of things. With bears, at least here, it just seems lately, especially there's your eagle. With bears, it's a little unpredictable. You know, like the guys in a fog neck that tied the deer to their waist and hiked out and were surprised that a bear attacked them. Well, you know.
You have meat tied to your waist, dude.
So, well, I mean, and they still got to get off that island, so you never know. Like, we had a small female around here. We'd see her about once every 2 weeks. She'd come in through the yard and gorge herself on berries and take off. Did not care that I was standing there. And
yeah, when you're a bear, you really don't have to give a shit.
Yeah. Well, and one of the rangers here has one pictured standing almost 12 feet tall.
Jesus. And that's a monster, dude.
So they've measured them and they measure the feet, and I think they darted one of them on a fog neck. I'm not sure, but matter of fact, he's one of the federal employees here. He came down to kind of document the bear that had kept coming through,
because
it was coming, cutting through the park too. And he said, no, it was almost 12 feet tall. And I want you to look at something that's 1,400 pounds and almost 12 feet tall, and you'll feel dwarfed. I'm not seeing one like that, but the one that I sent you the video of that stood up in front of us that day, I'm going to guess was 9 foot.
Yeah, that's a, so that's
stand
a
up and look at you.
Monster. That is a monster. Yep, monster. We'll eat you. That is a monster.
And if he's upset that you're fishing in his spot, he'll let you know about it.
Hell yeah, he act like everybody else that they're anchored on a hole down a marathon.
Good segue.
Hey, man, it's getting late around here, bro. I've been on a volleyball tournament all weekend, dude. Freaking Friday, Saturday, Sunday, man. I'm going to turn in for the night, my big bro. You there? You hear me?
Audio went a little funny.
Oh, you hear me?
Yeah. Well, you asked about the next outdoors trip. We're going to be offshore. Was it March? Third week of March. So we'll be about three different trips. So if we want to get back together, I know that we'll have a few trips offshore. We're going to prospect for kings, see where they're at, and do a few different things.
Let's just check in once a month, bro. Let's just do the Primal Podcast from Kodiak, Alaska, with Big Bear Bro Davis Lowry once a month, man, and just check in with what you're doing. That way you have to go do things in nature so we can talk about them. So now you're forced to have to go hunting and fishing a lot more.
Yeah, you won't have to force me. Yeah, you're right. We're looking forward to it.
All
right,
so let's do it then.
There's a million stories that people wish we would have shared on this one. But
oh, dude, we're not even. Oh, my God. We've talked about the four stories. And, you know, so let's do it. Let's do once every 30 days or so. Let's get back and do the Primal Podcast with Big Bear Davis Lowry out in Kodiak, Alaska, and see how it's going out there. And let's get some warm-up audio in and see if we can maybe put together some sort of outdoor show this summer.
That would be great. We'll have some of the camera stuff. I know that we've even talked to our media people and using our stuff at school, where some of the kids will amaze you here what they know about the outdoors growing up in Kodiak. And I think maybe even one of these days get some of the kids that want to do something like that if you're amenable to it. So.
Yeah, man. Heck yeah. I like that. A kid's hunting. Let's not give away any ideas here. And
yeah.
And so once a month, dude, let's do that. Let's get back on, man. Like I was saying, bro, I will tell you, man, thanks for coming on, dog. I'm whooped, bro. I was volleyball dad Friday, Saturday, Sunday in the ride home. I'm whooped. I feel like I've been playing volleyball all weekend, man.
I don't doubt it. Well, hug the fam and Momo, and we'll check back in from Alaska here. Once starting March, we've even got trips already lined up in June and Homer and a few other places. We're going to take a bush plane over to Larson and maybe Port Lions and be able to get something to you from there as well.
All right. Well, let's check in once a month. We're going to talk anyway, bro. I'm coming out there in LA in April and also in August. So, since I'm already on that coast, I may just have to just add a fucking week and shoot up to you, man.
Come on in. LA is direct to Anchorage, and then you're an hour small plane flight to me.
Oh, fuck yeah. We're going to make that happen, dog. But, man, dude, thanks for coming on and sharing this stuff, dude. I love you, man. Give Seneca and Scarlett and Noel and everybody some love there for my fam, too, man.
Well, sorry for the poor lighting here at the end. I should have sat up. But next time we do it, I'll have it rigged so we're facing the ocean.
Nah, that's good, man. It's you were just a hymns buck for a while. Cool, man. Well, I love you, man, and I'm gonna shut this down. I'll give you a call tomorrow though, man.
All right, thanks to everybody. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for watching. I appreciate you tuning into the Cognitive Rampage podcast. I promise you, we have just touched the cusp of the stories that run deep in the Lowry blood of the salt water, the fresh water, the wilderness, and the wild. We've done it, we've poked it, we've shot it, we've caught it, we've ate it, we've steamed it, we've filleted it, we've dressed it, we've trapped it. More than likely, the Lowry brothers have been doing that a long time. And for those of you out there that do that, please keep taking care of Mother Nature so she can take care of us. Treat her well, treat her with kindness and respect so she can keep treating us with kindness and life back and forth, because without nature, we really don't have anything. And that's true. So, my love to Mother Nature, those listening, and on the podcast, I appreciate you tuning in tonight. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're taking care of nature. Also, hope you're living in your cognitive rampage. Love you.